heavy footstep at the door, and Chewbacca charged in, bowcaster at the ready. He saw Leia, roared a question as his weapon swung to cover the matrack.
"I'm not in danger, Chewie," Leia told him. "Just very angry. I need you to get me some more samples from the contaminated area. Not soil this time, some of the colm grass."
She could see the surprise in the Wookiee's face, but he merely growled an acknowledgement and left.
"Why do you wish to examine the colm grass?"
the matrack asked.
"You said yourself it smelled different than before the rains came,"
Leia reminded her.
"I think there may be a connection here we've missed."
"What connection could there be?"
Leia shook her head.
"I don't want to say anything more right now, Matrak. Not until I'm sure."
"Do you still wish to go to Nisteo?"
"More than ever," Leia said grimly. "But not to hit and run. If Chewie's samples show what I think they will, I'm going to go straight to the Dynasts."
"What if they refuse to listen?"
Leia took a deep breath.
"They can't refuse," she said. "You've already lost 3 generations of your sons. You can't afford to lose any more."
For a minute, the Nogri gazed at her in silence.
"You speak truth,"
she said. She hissed softly between her needle teeth, and with her usual fluid grace, moved toward the door.
"I will return within the hour,"
she said over her shoulder.
"Will you be ready to leave then?"
"Yes,"
Leia nodded.
"Where are you going?"
The Matrak paused at the door, her dark eyes locking onto Leia's.
"You speak truth, Lady Vader. We must listen. I will be back."
The Matrak returned 20 minutes later, 5 minutes ahead of Chewbacca. The Wookiee had collected a double handful of the colm grass from widely scattered sites and retrieved the analysis unit from its hiding place in the decon droid shed. Leia got the unit started on a pair of the ugly brown plants, and they set off for Nisteo. But not alone. To Leia's surprise, a young Nogri female was already seated at the driver's seat of the open-topped landspeeder the Matrak had obtained for them. And as they drove through the village at a brisk walking pace, a dozen more Nogri joined them, striding along both sides of the landspeeder like an honor guard. The Matrak herself walked next to the vehicle, her face unreadable in the dim, reflected light from the instrument panel. Sitting in the back seat next to the analysis unit, Chewbacca fingered his bowcaster and rumbled distrustingly deep in his throat. Behind him, wedged into the luggage compartment at the rear of the vehicle, 3PO was uncharacteristically quiet. They passed through the village into the surrounding cropland, running without lights, the small group of Nogri around them virtually invisible in the cloud-shrouded starlight. The party reached another village, barely distinguishable from the cropland now that its own lights were darkened for the night, and passed through without incident. More cropland, another village, more cropland. Occasionally, Leia caught glimpses of the lights from Nisteo far ahead, and she wondered uneasily whether confronting the Dynasts directly was really the wisest course of action at this point. They ruled with the assistance, or at least the tacit consent, of the Empire. And to accuse them of collaboration with a lie would not sit well with such a proud and honor-driven people. And then, in the northeast sky, the larger of Honegger's 3 moons broke through a thick cloud bank. And with a shock, Leia saw that she and her original escort were no longer alone. All around them was an immense sea of shadowy figures, flowing like a silent tide along the landspeeder's path. Behind her, Chewbacca growled surprise of his own. With his hunter's senses, he had already been aware that the size of their party was increasing with each village they passed through. But even he hadn't grasped the full extent of the recruitment, and wasn't at all certain he liked it. But Leia found some of the tightness in her chest easing as she settled back against the landspeeder's cushions. Whatever happened in Nisteo now, the sheer size of the assemblage would make it impossible for the Dynast to simply arrest her and cover up the fact that she'd ever been there. The Matrak had guaranteed her a chance to speak. The rest would be up to her. they reached the edge of Nisteo just before sunrise to find another crowd of Nogri waiting for them.
Word has arrived ahead of us,
the Matriarch told Leia as the land speeder and its escort moved toward them.
They have come to see the daughter of the Lord Vader and to hear her message.
Leia looked at the crowd. And what is the message you've told them to expect?
That the debt of honor to the Empire has been paid in full,
the Matriarch said.
That you have come to offer a new life for the Nogri people.
Her dark eyes bored into Leia's face in unspoken question. Leia looked in turn over her shoulder at Chewbacca and raised her eyebrows. The Wookiee rumbled an affirmative and tilted the analysis unit up to show her the display. Sometime during their midnight journey, the unit had finally finished its work. And as she read the analysis, Leia felt a fresh stirring of her earlier anger toward the Empire at what they'd done to these people. Yes, she told the Matriarch, I can indeed prove that the debt has been paid. Nearer now to the waiting crowd, she could see in the dusky light that most of the Nogri were females. The relative handful of males she could spot were either the very light gray skin tone of children and young adolescents, or the much darker gray of the elderly. But directly in line with the landspeeder's path were a group of about 10 males with the steely gray color of young adults. I see the dynasts have heard the word too, she said.
That is our official escort,
the Matriarch said.
They will accompany us to the Grand Duca, where the dynasts await you.
The official escort, or guards, or soldiers, Leia wasn't quite sure how to think of them, remained silent as they walked in arrowhead formation in front of the landspeeder. The rest of the crowd was alive with whispered conversation, most of it between the city dwellers and the villagers. What they were saying, Leia didn't know. But wherever her eyes turned, the Nogri fell silent and gazed back in obvious fascination. The city was smaller than Leia had expected, particularly given the limited land area the Nogri had available to them. After only a few minutes, they arrived at the Grand Duca. From its name, Leia had expected it to be simply a larger version of the Duca back in the village. It was certainly larger, but despite the similarity in design, there was a far different sense to this version. Its walls and roof were made of a silver-blue metal instead of wood, with no carvings of any sort on their surfaces. The supporting pillars were black, metal, or worked stone. Leia couldn't tell which. A wide set of black and red marbled steps led up to a gray flagstone entrance terrace outside the double doors. The whole thing seemed cold and remote, very different from the mental picture of the Nogri ethos that she'd built up over the past few days. Fleetingly, she wondered if the Grand Duca had been built not by the Nogri, but by the Empire. At the top of the steps stood a row of 13 middle-aged Nogri males, each wearing an elaborately tooled garment that looked like a cross between a vest and a shawl. Behind them, his arms and legs chained to a pair of upright posts in the middle of the terrace, was Kavarak. Leia gazed past the row of dynasts at him, a ripple of sympathetic ache running through her. The Matriarch had described the mechanics of a Nogri public humiliation to her, but it was only as she looked at him that she began to grasp the full depth of the shame involved in the ritual. Kavarak's face was haggard and pale, and he sagged with fatigue against the chains holding his wrists and upper arms. But his head was upright, his dark eyes alert and watching. The crowd parted to both sides as the landspeeder reached the Duca area, forming a passage for the vehicle to move through. The official escort went up the stairs, forming a line between the crowd and the row of dynasts.
Remember, we're not here to fight,
Leia murmured to Chewbacca, and summoning every bit of regal demeanor she could muster, she stepped out of the landspeeder and walked up the stairs. The last rustle of conversation in the crowd behind her vanished as she reached the top.
I greet you, dynasts of the Nogri people, she said in a loud voice. I am Leia Organa Solo, daughter of your lord Darth Vader, he who came to you in your distress and brought you aid.
She held out the back of her hand toward the Nogri in the center of the line. He gazed at her for a moment without moving. Then, with obvious reluctance, he stepped forward and gingerly sniffed at her hand. He repeated the test twice before straightening up again.
"The Lord Vader is dead," he said. "Our new Lord, the Grand Admiral, has ordered us to bring you to him, Leia Organa Solo. You will come with us to await the preparation of transport."
From the bottom of the steps, Chewbacca growled warningly. Leia quieted him with a gesture and shook her head.
"I have not come here to surrender to your Grand Admiral," she told the Dynast.
"You will do so, nonetheless," he said.
He signaled, and two of the guards left their line and moved toward Leia. She stood her ground, again signaling Chewbacca to do the same.
"Do you serve the Empire, then? Or the people of Honiger?"
"All Nogri of honor serve both,"
the Dynast said.
"Indeed,"
Leia said.
"Does serving Honiger now mean sending generation after generation of young men to die in the Empire's wars?"
"You are an alien,"
the Dynast said contemptuously.
"You know nothing about the honor of the Nokri."
He nodded to the guards now standing at Leia's sides.
"Take her into the Dooka."
"Are you then so afraid of the words of a lone alien woman?"
Leia asked, as the Nogri took her arms in a firm grip.
"Or is it that you fear your own power will be diminished by my coming?"
"You will speak no words of discord and poison,"
the Dynast snarled. Chewbacca rumbled again, and Leia could sense him preparing to leap up the stairs to her aid.
"My words are not of discord,"
she said, raising her voice loud enough for the whole crowd to hear.
"My words are of treachery."
There was a sudden stirring from the crowd.
"You will be silent,"
the Dynast insisted.
"Or I will have you silenced."
"I will hear her speak,"
the Matrak called from below.
"You will be silent as well,"
the Dynast barked as the crowd murmured approval of the Matrak's demand.
"You have no place or speech here, Matrak of the Clan Kimbar. I have not called a Convocate of the Nogri people."
"Yet the Convocate is here,"
the Matrak countered.
"The Lady Vader has come. We would hear her words."
"Then you will hear them in prison,"
the Dynast gestured, and two more of the official guard left their line, heading purposefully toward the steps. It was, Leia judged, the right moment.
Glancing down at her belt, she reached out through the Force with all the power and control she could manage,
and her lightsaber leaped from her belt, breaking free from its quick release and jumping up in front of her. Her eyes and mind found the switch, and with a snap hiss, the brilliant green-white blade flashed into existence, carving out a vertical line between her and the line of Dynasts. There was a sound like a hissing gasp from the crowd. The two Nogri who had been moving toward the Matrak froze in mid-stride. And as the gasp vanished into utter silence, Leia knew that she'd finally gotten their complete attention.
"I am not merely the daughter of the Lord Vader," she said,
putting an edge of controlled anger into her voice.
"I am the Malari Ush, heir to his authority and his power. I have come through many dangers to reveal the treachery that has been done to the Nogri people."
She withdrew as much of her concentration as she could risk from the floating lightsaber to look slowly down the line of Dynasts.
"Will you hear me? Or will you instead choose death?"
For a long minute, the silence remained unbroken. Leia listened to the thudding of her heart and the deep hum of the lightsaber, wondering how long she could hold the weapon steady in midair before losing control of it. And then, from halfway down the line to her left, one of the Dynasts took a step forward.
"I would hear the words of the Malari Ush,"
he said. The first Dynast spat.
"Do not add your own discord, Erheim,"
he warned.
"You see here only a chance to save the honor of the Clan Kimbar.
Perhaps I seek a chance to save the honor of the Nogri people, Vorkok.
Urheim retorted.
I would hear the Malari Ush speak. Do I stand alone?
Silently, another Dynast stepped forward to join him. Then another did so, and another, until 9 of the 13 stood with Urheim. Vorkok hissed between his teeth, but stepped back to his place in line.
The Dynast of Harnager have chosen,
he growled.
You may speak.
The two guards released her arms. Leia counted out 2 more seconds before reaching a hand up to take the lightsaber and close it down.
I will tell the story twice, she said,
turning to the crowd as she returned the weapon to her belt.
Once as the Empire has told you, once as it truly is. You may then decide for yourselves whether or not the Nogri debt has been paid. You all know the history of how your world was devastated by the battle in space. How many of the Nogri were killed by the volcanoes and earthquakes and killer seas that followed until a remnant arrived here to this place. How the Lord Darth Vader came to you and offered you aid. How after the falling of the strange-smelling rains, all plants except the colm grass withered and died. How the Empire told you the ground had been poisoned with chemicals from the destroyed ship, and offered machines to clean the soil for you. And you know all too well the price they demanded for those machines.
Yet the ground is indeed poisoned,
one of the Dynast told her.
I and many others have tried through the years to grow food in places where the machines have not been. But the seed was wasted, for nothing would grow.
Yes, Leia nodded. But it was not the soil that was poisoned. Or rather, not the soil directly.
She signaled to Chewbacca. Reaching back into the landspeeder, he picked up the analyzer unit and one of the colm grass plants and brought them up the steps to her.
I will now tell you the story that is true,
Leia said as the Wookiee went back down the steps.
After the Lord Vader left in his ship, other ships came. They flew far and wide over your world. To any who asked, they probably said they were surveying the land, perhaps searching for other survivors or other habitable places. But that was all a lie. Their true purpose was to seed your world with a new type of plant. She held up the colm grass. This plant.
Your truth is dreams,
the Dynast Vorkok spat.
Colm grass has grown on Harnager since the beginning of knowledge.
I didn't say this was colm grass,
Leia countered.
It looks like the colm grass you remember, and even smells very much like it. But not exactly. It is in fact a subtle creation of the Empire, sent by the Emperor to poison your world.
The silence of the crowd broke into a buzz of stunned conversation. Leia gave them time, letting her gaze drift around the area as she waited. There must be close to 1,000 Nogri pressed around the Grand Duca, she estimated, and more were still coming into the area. The word about her must be still spreading, she decided, and glanced around to see where they were coming from. And as she looked off to her left, a slight glint of metal caught her eye. Well back from the Grand Duca, half hidden in the long early morning shadows beside another building, was the boxy shape of a decon droid. Leia stared at it, a shiver of sudden horror running through her. A decon droid with unusual curiosity. 3PO had mentioned that, but she'd been too preoccupied at the time to pay any attention to his concerns. But for a decon droid to be in Nisteo, 50 kilometers or more from its designated work area, was far more than just overly developed curiosity. It had to be. She squatted down, mentally berating herself for carelessness. Of course the Grand Admiral wouldn't have just flitted away on the spur of the moment. Not without leaving someone or something to keep an eye on things.
Chewie, over there. To your right, she hissed. Looks like a decon droid, but I think it's an espionage droid.
The Wookiee growled something vicious and started pushing his way through the crowd. But even as the Nogri made way for him, Leia knew he would never make it. Espionage droids weren't brilliant, but they were smart enough to know not to hang around after their cover had been blown. Long before Chewbacca could get over there, it would be off and running. If it had a transmitter, and if there were any Imperial ships within range. "People of Honegger," she shouted over the conversation. "I will prove to you right now the truth of what I say. One of the Emperor's decon droids is there," she pointed to it. "Bring it to me." The crowd turned to look, and Leia could sense their uncertainty. But before anyone could move, the droid abruptly vanished around the corner of the building it had been skulking beside. A second later, Leia caught a glimpse of it in between two other buildings, scuttling away for all it was worth. It was tactically the worst decision the droid could have made. Running away was as good as admitting guilt, particularly in front of people who had grown up with the things and knew exactly what the normal behavior range of a decon droid was. The crowd roared, and from the rear perhaps 50 of the older adolescents took off after it. And as they did so, one of the guards on the terrace beside Leia cupped his hand around his mouth and sent a piercing half-scream into the air. Leia jerked away, ears ringing with the sound. The guard screamed again, and this time there was an answer from somewhere in the near distance. The guard switched to a warble that sounded like a complicated medley of bird calls. A short reply, and both fell silent.
"He calls the others to the hunt,"
the matriarch told Leia. Leia nodded, squeezing her hands into fists as she watched the pursuers disappear around a corner after the droid. If the droid had a transmitter, it would right now be frantically dumping its data. And then suddenly, the pursuers were back in sight, accompanied by a half-dozen adult Nogri males, held aloft like the prize from a hunt, struggling uselessly in their grip, was the droid. Leia took a deep breath.
"Bring it here to me,"
she said as the party approached. They did so, six of the adolescents lugging it up the stairs and laying it on its back on the terrace. Leia ignited her lightsaber, her eyes searching the droid as she did so for signs of a concealed antenna port. She couldn't see one, but that by itself didn't prove anything. Steeling herself for the worst, she sliced a vertical cut through the droid's outer shell. Two more crosswise cuts, and its internal workings were laid out for all to see. Chewbacca was already kneeling beside the droid as Leia shut down her lightsaber, his huge fingers probing delicately among the maze of tubes and cables and fibers. Near the top of the cavity was a small gray box. He threw a significant look at Leia and pulled it free from its connections. Leia swallowed as he laid it on the ground beside him. She recognized it all right, from long and sometimes bitter experience. The motivator-slash-recorder unit from an Imperial probe droid. But the antenna connector jack was empty. Luck or the Force was still with them. Chewbacca was poking around the lower part of the cavity now. Leia watched as he pulled several cylinders out of the tangle, examined their markings, and returned them to their places. The crowd was starting to murmur again when, with a satisfied murmur of his own, he pulled out a large cylinder and slender needle from near the intake hopper. Gingerly, Leia took the cylinder from him. It shouldn't be dangerous to her, but there was no point in taking chances.
"I call on the dynasts to bear witness that this cylinder was indeed taken from inside of this machine," she called to the crowd.
"Is this your proof?"
Urheim asked, eyeing the cylinder doubtfully.
"It is,"
Leia nodded.
"I have said that these plants are not the Kolmgrass you remember from before the disaster, but I have not said yet what is different about them."
Picking up one of the plants, she held it up for them to see.
"The Emperor's scientists took your Kolmgrass and changed it,"
she told the crowd.
"They created differences that would breed true between generations. The altered smell you have noticed is caused by a chemical which the stem, roots, and leaves secrete. A chemical which has one purpose only, to inhibit the growth of all other plant life. The machines that the Grand Admiral claims are cleaning the ground are in fact doing nothing but destroying this special Kolmgrass which the Empire planted."
"Your truth is again dreams,"
Vorkork scoffed.
"The droid machines require nearly 2 tens of days to cleanse a single perka of land. My daughters could destroy the Kolmgrass there in one."
Leia smiled grimly.
Perhaps the machines don't require as much time as it appears. Let's find out.
Holding the comb grass out in front of her, she eased a drop of pale liquid from the tip of the needle and touched it to the stem. It was as dramatic a demonstration as she could have hoped for. The drop soaked through the dull brown surface of the plant, and for a handful of seconds, nothing seemed to happen. There was a faint sizzling sound, and then, without warning, the plant suddenly began to turn black and wither. There was a hissing gasp from the crowd as the patch of catalytic destruction spread along the stem towards the leaves and roots. Leia held it up a moment longer, then dropped it on the terrace. There it lay, writhing like a dry branch thrown into a fire, until there was nothing left but a short and unrecognizable filament of wrinkled black. Leia touched it tentatively with the toe of her boot, and it disintegrated into a fine powder. She had expected another outburst of surprise or outrage from the crowd. Their dead silence was in its own way more unnerving than any noise would have been. The Nogri understood the implications of the demonstration all right, and as she looked around at their faces, she knew that she'd won. She put the cylinder down on the terrace beside the destroyed plant and turned to face the dynasts.
"I have shown you my proof," she said. "You must now decide whether the Nogri debt has been paid."
She looked at Vorkork, and moved by an impulse she couldn't explain, she unhooked her lightsaber from her belt and put it in his hand. Stepping past him, she went over to Kabarak.
"I'm sorry," she said softly. "I didn't expect for you to have to go through anything like this because of me."
Kabarak opened his mouth in a needle-toothed Nogri smile.
"The Empire has long taught us that it is a warrior's pride and duty to face pain for his overlord. Should I do less for the Malhari Oosh of the Lord Vader?"
Leia shook her head.
"I'm not your overlord, Kabarak, and I never will be. The Nogri are a free people. I came only to try to restore that freedom to you."
"And to bring us on your side against the Empire,"
Vorkork said caustically from behind her. Leia turned.
"That would be my wish," she agreed. "But I do not ask it."
Vorkork studied her a moment. Then reluctantly, he handed her lightsaber back to her.
"The Dynasts of Hunniker cannot and will not make so important a decision in a single day," he said. "There is much to consider, and a full convocate of the Nogri people must be called."
"Then call it,"
Kabarak urged.
"The Malhari Oosh of the Lord Vader is here."
"And can the Malhari Oosh protect us from the might of the Empire, should we choose to defy it?"
Vorkork countered.
"But..."
"No, Kabarak. He's right,"
Leia said.
"The Empire would rather kill you all than let you defect or even become neutral."
"Have the Nogri forgotten how to fight?"
Kabarak scoffed.
"And has Kabarak Clan Kimbar forgotten what happened to Hunniker 48 years ago?"
Vorkork snapped.
"If we defy the Empire now, we would have no option but to leave our world and hide."
"And doing that would guarantee the instant slaughter of the commando teams that are out serving the Empire,"
Leia pointed out to Kabarak.
"Would you have them die without even knowing the reason? There is no honor in that."
"You speak wisdom, Lady Vader,"
Vorkork said, and for the first time Leia thought she could detect a trace of grudging respect in his eyes.
"True warriors understand the value of patience. You will leave us now."
"Yes," Leia nodded. "My presence here is still a danger to you. I would ask one favor, that you would allow Kabarak to return me to my ship."
Vorkork looked at Kabarak.
"Kabarak's family conspired to free him," he said. "They succeeded, and he escaped into space. 3 commando teams who were here on leave have followed in pursuit. The entire clan Kimbar would be in disgrace until they yield up the names of those responsible.
Leia nodded. It was as good a story as any. Just be sure to warn the commandos you send to be careful when they make contact with the other teams. If even a hint of this gets back to the Empire, they'll destroy you.
Do not presume to tell warriors that job,
Vorkork retorted. He hesitated.
Can you obtain more of this for us?
He asked, gesturing back at the cylinder.
Yes, Leia said. We'll need to go to Endor first and pick up my ship. Kabarak can accompany me back to Coruscant then, and I'll get him a supply.
The Dynast hesitated.
There is no way to bring it sooner.
A fragment of conversation floated up from Leia's memory. The Matrak mentioning that the window for planting this season's crops was almost closed.
There might be, she said. Kabarak, how much time would we save if we skipped Endor and went directly to Coruscant?
Approximately 4 days, Lady Vader, he said.
Leia nodded. Han would kill her for leaving his beloved Falcon sitting in orbit at Endor like that. But there was no way around it.
All right, she nodded. That's what we'll do then. Don't forget to be careful where you use it, though. You can't risk incoming Imperial ships spotting new cropland.
Do not presume either to tell farmers their job,
Vorkork said, but this time there was a touch of dry humor in his voice.
We will eagerly await its arrival.
Then we'd better leave at once, Leia said.
She looked past him to the Matrak and nodded her head in thanks.
Finally everything was starting to go their way. Despite her earlier doubts, the Force was clearly with her.
Turning back to Kabarak, she ignited her lightsaber and cut him loose from his chains.
Come on, Kabarak, she said. Time to go.
Chapter 25.
The Coral Vanda billed itself as the most impressive casino in the galaxy, and as he looked around the huge and ornate trawler room, Han could understand why he'd never heard of anyone challenging that claim. The room had at least a dozen sabacc tables scattered around its three half-levels, plus a whole range of lugjack bars, tree-galled booths, hollow chess tables, and even a few of the traditional horseshoe-shaped warp tops, favored by hardcore Krynbid fanatics. A bar, bisecting the room, stocked most anything a customer would want to drink, either to celebrate a win or forget a loss. And there was a serving window built into the back wall for people who didn't want to stop playing even to eat. And when you got tired of looking at your cards or into your glass, there was the view through the full-wall transparent outer hull. Rippling blue-green water, hundreds of brilliantly colored fish and small sea mammals, and around all of it, the intricate winding loops and fans of the famous Pantolim and coral reefs. The trawler room was, in short, as fine a casino as Han had ever seen in his life. And the Coral Vanda had 7 other rooms just like it. Sitting at the bar beside him, Lando downed the last of his drink and pushed the glass away from him.
"So what now?" he asked.
"He's here, Lando,"
Han told him, tearing his gaze from the reef outside and looking one more time around the casino.
"Somewhere."
"I think he skipped this trip," Lando disagreed. "Probably ran out of money. Remember what Cena said? The guy spends it like poisoned water."
"Yeah, but if he was out of money, he'd be trying to sell another ship,"
Han pointed out. He drained his own glass and got up from his seat.
"Come on, one more room to go."
"And then we do it all over again,"
Lando growled.
"And again and again. It's a waste of time."
"You got any other ideas?"
"Matter of fact, I do,"
Lando said, as they swung wide to get around a large Herglick balanced precariously across 2 of the seats and headed down the bar toward the exit.
Instead of just wandering around like we have for the past 6 hours, we should plant ourselves at a sabacc table somewhere and start dropping some serious money. Word'll get around that there are a couple pikers ripe for plucking. And if this guy loses money as fast as Cena says, he'll be plenty interested in trying to make some of it back. Han looked at his friend in mild surprise. He'd had the same idea a couple of hours ago, but hadn't figured on Lando going for it.
You think your professional gambler's pride can take that kind of beating?
Lando looked him straight in the eye. If it'll get me out of here and back to my mining operation, my pride can take anything.
Han grimaced. He sometimes forgot that he kind of dragged Lando into all of this.
Yeah,
he said.
Sorry. Okay, tell you what. We'll give the Safkin room one last look. If he's not there, we'll come back here and...
He broke off. There, on the bar, in front of an empty seat, was a tray with a still-smoldering cigar sitting in it. A cigar with an unusual but very familiar aroma to it.
Uh-oh, Lando said quietly at his shoulder.
I don't believe it,
Han said, dropping his hand to his blaster as he threw a quick look around the crowded room.
Believe it, buddy, Lando said.
He touched the cushion of the vacant seat.
It's still warm. He must be... There he is.
It was Niles Ferrier, all right, standing beneath the ornate shimmer-glass exit archway. Another of his ever-present cigars gripped between his teeth. He grinned at them, made a sort of mock salute, and disappeared out the door.
Well, that's just great, Lando said. Now what?
He wants us to follow him,
Han said, throwing a quick glance around them. He didn't see anyone he recognized, but that didn't mean anything. Ferrier's people were probably all around them.
Let's go see what he's up to.
It could be a trap, Lando warned.
Or it could be ready to deal,
Han countered.
Keep your blaster ready.
No kidding.
They were halfway to the archway when they heard it. A short, deep-toned thud, like a distant crack of thunder. It was followed by another, louder one. And then a third. The conversational din of the casino faltered as others paused to listen. And as they did so, the choral banda seemed to tremble a little. Han looked at Lando.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
He muttered.
Turbo laser bursts hitting the water,
Lando murmured grimly.
Varia's dealing all right, only not with us.
Han nodded, feeling a hard knot settle into his stomach. Ferrier had gone ahead and made a deal with the Empire. And if the Imperials got their hands on the Katana fleet, the balance of power in the ongoing war would suddenly be skewed back in their favor. And under the command of a Grand Admiral...
We've got to find that ship dealer and fast,
he said, hurrying toward the exit.
Maybe we can get him out in an escape pod or something before we're boarded.
Hopefully, before the rest of the passengers start panicking,
Lando added.
Let's go.
They'd made it to the archway when their time ran out. There was a sudden thunderclap, not distant this time, but seemingly right on top of them. And for a second, the coral reef outside the transparent hull lit up with an angry green light. The coral banda lurched like a wounded animal, and Han grabbed at the edge of the archway for balance. Something caught his arm and pulled hard, yanking him out of the archway to his right. He grabbed reflexively for his blaster, but before he could draw it, strong, furry arms wrapped around his chest and face, pinning his gun hand to his side and blotting out all view of the sudden panic in the corridor. He tried to shout, but the arm was blocking his mouth as well as his eyes. Struggling uselessly, swearing under what breath he could get, he was hauled backwards down the corridor. Two more thunderclaps came, the second nearly throwing both him and his attacker off their feet. A change of direction sideways, his elbow banged against the side of a doorway. A hard shove, and he was free again, gasping for breath. He was in a small drink storage room, with crates of bottles lining three of the walls almost to the ceiling. Several had already been knocked to the floor by the coral vanda's lurching, and out of one of them, a dark red liquid was oozing. Lounging beside the door, grinning again, was Ferrier.
Hello, Solo,
he said.
Nice of you to drop in.
It was too kind of an invitation to turn down,
Han said sourly, looking around. His blaster was hovering in front of a stack of crates 2 meters away, right in the middle of a thick and strangely solid shadow.
"You remember my wraith, of course,"
Ferrier said blandly, gesturing at the shadow.
"He's the one who sneaked up onto the Lady Luck's ramp to plant our backup homing beacon. The one inside the ship."
So that was how Ferrier had managed to get here so fast. Another thunderclap shook the Coral Banda, and another crate tottered too far and crashed to the floor. Han jumped back out of the way and took a closer look at the shadow. This time he was able to pick out the eyes and a glint of white fangs. He'd always thought wraiths were just space legend. Apparently not.
"It's not too late to make a deal," he told Ferrier.
The other gave him a look of surprise.
"This is your deal, Solo," he said. "Why else do you think you're in here instead of out where shooting's about to start? We're just gonna keep you here nice and safe until things settle down again."
He cocked an eyebrow.
"Calrissian now, he's another story."
Han frowned at him.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that I'm tired of him getting in my way," Ferrier said softly. "So when the Coral Banda finally gives up and surfaces, I'm gonna make sure he's right up there in front, trying valiantly to protect poor Captain Hoffner from the evil stormtroopers. With any luck..."
He spread his hands and smiled.
"Hoffner's the guy's name, huh?"
Han said, fighting his anger down. Getting mad wasn't going to help Lando any.
"Suppose he's not on board. The Imperials won't be happy about that."
"He's aboard,"
Ferrier assured him.
"Getting a little stir-crazy, though. He's been sort of locked in our suite since about an hour after we sailed."
"You sure you got the right guy?"
Ferrier shrugged.
"If not, the Grand Admiral is only himself to blame. He's the one who supplied me with the name."
Another blast rocked the ship.
"Well, nice talking to you, Solo, but I got a deal to close,"
Ferrier said, regaining his balance and hitting the door release.
"See you around."
"We'll pay you twice what the Empire's offering,"
Han said, trying one last time. Ferrier didn't even bother to answer. Smiling one last time, he slipped out the door and closed it behind him. Han looked at the shadow that was the wraith.
"How about you?"
he asked.
"You want to be rich?"
The wraith showed its teeth, but made no other reply. There was another thunderclap, and they were jerked hard to the side. The Coral Banda was a well-built ship, but Han knew it couldn't stand up to this kind of pounding for long. Sooner or later, it would have to give up and surface, and then the stormtroopers would come. He had just that long to find a way out of here. The Chimera's turbolaser batteries fired again, and on the bridge holo display, a short red line dug briefly into the sea near the tapered black cylinder that marked the Coral Banda's position. For an instant, the red line was sheathed in the pale green of seawater, suddenly flashed into superheated steam, and then the pale green spread outward in all directions, and the Coral Banda rocked visibly as the shockwave passed it.
"They're stubborn. I'll give them that,"
Pelion commented.
"They have a great many wealthy patrons aboard," Thrawn reminded him. "Many of whom would rather drown than give up their money under threat of force."
Pelion glanced at his readouts.
"It won't be long until they're at that choice. Main propulsion's been knocked out, and they're developing microfractures in their hull seams. Computer projects that if they don't surface in 10 minutes, they won't be able to."
"They're a ship full of gamblers, Captain," Thrawn said. "They'll gamble on the strength of their ship while they seek an alternative."
Pelion frowned at the holo display.
"What alternative could they possibly have?"
"Observe."
Thrawn touched his board, and a small white circle appeared on the holo in front of the Coral Banda, extending backward like the path of a crazed worm.
"There appears to be a path here beneath this section of the reef that would allow them to evade us, at least temporarily. I believe that's where they're heading.
They'll never make it,
Pellion decided.
Not the way they're bouncing around down there. Best to be sure, though. A shot right at the entrance to the maze should do it.
Yes, Thrawn said, his voice meditative. A pity, though, to have to damage any of these reefs. They're genuine works of art. Unique, perhaps, in that they were created by living yet non-sentient beings. I should have liked to have studied them more closely.
He turned to Pellion again, gave a short nod.
You may fire when ready.
There was another clap of thunder as the Imperial ship overhead flash-boiled the water near them, and as the Coral Vanda lurched to the side, Han made his move. Letting the ship's motion throw him sideways, he half-staggered, half-fell across the storeroom to slam into one of the stacks of crates, turning at the last instant so that his back was to them. His hands flung up over his head as if for balance, found the bottom corners of the topmost crate, and as the force of his impact shook the stack, he brought the box tipping over on top of him. He let it roll a quarter rotation toward his head, then shifted his grip and shoved it as hard as he could toward the Wraith. The alien caught it square on the upper torso, lost his balance, and crashed backward to the floor. Han was on him in a second, kicking his blaster out of the Wraith's hand and jumping after it. He caught up with the weapon, spun back up. The Wraith had gotten clear of the box and was scrambling to get back to his feet on a floor now slippery with spilled Menkuro whiskey.
Hold it!
Han snapped, gesturing with the blaster. He might as well have been talking to a hole in the air. The Wraith continued onto his feet, and with the only other option being to shoot him dead, Han lowered his aim and fired into the pool of whiskey. There was a gentle whoosh, and abruptly, the center of the room burst into blue-tinged flame. The alien leaped backward out of the fire, screaming something in his own language, which Han was just as glad he couldn't understand. The Wraith's momentum slammed him up against a stack of crates, nearly bringing the whole pile down. Han fired twice into the crate above the alien, starting twin waterfalls of alcohol cascading down around his shoulders and head. The alien screamed again, got his balance back. And with one final shot, Han set the waterfalls on fire. The Wraith's scream turned into a high-pitched wail as it twisted away from the blaze, its head and shoulders sheathed in flame. More in anger than pain, though. Han knew alcohol fires weren't all that hot. Given time, the Wraith would slap out the fire and then very likely break Han's neck. Wasn't given that time. Midway through the wail, the storeroom's automatic fire system finally sputtered into action, the sensors directing streams of fire foam straight into the Wraith's face. Han didn't wait to see the outcome. Ducking past the temporarily blinded alien, he slipped out the door. The corridor, which had been crowded with panicking people when he'd first been grabbed, was now deserted. The passengers on their way to the escape pods or the imagined safety of their staterooms. Firing a shot into the storeroom lock to seal it, Han hurried forward toward the ship's main hatchway and hoped he'd get to Lando in time. From far below him, almost lost among the shouts and screams of frightened passengers, Lando could hear the muffled hum of activated pumps. Sooner than he'd expected, the Coral Vanda was surrendering. He swore under his breath, throwing another quick look over his shoulder. Where in the blazes had Han gotten to anyway? Probably hunting for Farrier, wanting to see what the slippery ship thief was up to. Trust Han to run off and play a hunch when there was work to be done. A dozen of the Coral Banda's crewers were busy taking up defensive positions inside the ship's main hatchway as he arrived.
I need to talk to the captain or another officer right away, he called to them.
Get back to your room! One of the men snapped without looking at him. We're about to be boarded!
I know, Lando said. And I know what the Imperials want.
That one rated him a quick look.
Yeah? What?
One of your passengers, Lando told him. He has something the Empire...
What's his name?
I don't know. I've got a description, though.
Wonderful,
the crewer grunted, checking the power level on his blaster.
Tell you what you do. You head aft and start going door to door. Let us know if you find him.
Lando gritted his teeth.
I'm serious.
So am I, the other retorted. Go on, get out of here.
But
I said move it.
He pointed his blaster at Lando.
If your passenger's got any sense, he's probably already ejected in an escape pod anyway.
Lando backed away down the corridor, the whole thing belatedly falling together in his mind. No, the ship supplier wouldn't be in any escape pod. He probably wouldn't even be in his stateroom. Ferrier was here. And knowing Ferrier, he wouldn't have deliberately shown himself like that unless he'd already won the race. The deck rocked slightly beneath his feet. The Coral Vanda had reached the surface. Turning, Lando hurried aft again. There was a passenger access computer terminal a couple of corridors back. If he could get a passenger list from it and find Ferrier's room, he might be able to get to them before the Imperials took control of the ship. Breaking into a quick jog, he turned to a cross corridor. They were striding purposefully toward him. Four large men with blasters at the ready, with a thin, white-haired man almost hidden in the center of the group. The lead man spotted Lando, snapped his blaster up, and fired. The first shot was a clean miss. The second sizzled into the wall as Lando ducked back behind the corner.
So much for finding Ferrier's room, Lando muttered.
Another handful of shots spit past his barricade, and then, surprisingly, the firing stopped. Blaster in hand, hugging the corridor wall, Lando eased back to the corner and threw a quick look around it. They were gone. Great, he muttered, taking a longer look. They were gone, all right. Probably into one of the crew-only areas that ran down the central core of the ship. Chasing after someone through an unfamiliar area was usually not a good idea. But there weren't a whole lot of other options available. Grimacing to himself, he started around the corner. And yelped as a blaster bolt from his right scorched past his sleeve. He dived forward into the cross corridor, catching a glimpse as he fell of three more men coming toward him down the main corridor. He hit the thick carpet hard enough to see stars, rolled onto his side, and yanked his legs out of the line of fire, fully aware that if any of the original group was watching from cover, he was dead. A barrage of blaster shots from the newcomers bit into the wall, with the kind of clustering that meant it was being used as cover fire while they advanced on him. Breathing hard, that crash dive had knocked the wind out of him. Lando got to his feet and started toward an arched doorway halfway down the cross corridor. It wouldn't give him much cover, but it was the best he had. He had just made it to the doorway when there was a sudden curse from the direction of his attackers. A handful of shots from what sounded like a different model blaster. And then silence. Lando frowned, wondering what they were pulling now. He could hear footsteps running toward him. Flattening himself into the doorway as best he could, he leveled his blaster at the intersection. The footsteps came to the intersection and paused.
Lando?
Lando lowered his blaster with a silent sigh of relief.
Over here, Han, he called. Come on, various people have our man.
Han rounded the corner and sprinted toward him.
That's not all, buddy,
he panted.
Ferrier's gunning for you, too.
Lando grimaced. He hadn't missed by much, either.
Never mind me, he said. I think they must have gone down the ship's core. We gotta catch up with them before they reach the main hatchway.
We can try,
Han said grimly, looking around.
Over there. Looks like a crewer access door.
It was, and it was locked.
Various people got in,
Lando grunted, stooping down to examine the half-open release panel.
Yeah, here. It's been hot-wired. Let's see.
He probed carefully into the mechanism with the tip of his little finger, and with a satisfying click, the panel unlocked and slid open.
There we go, he said.
He got to his feet again, and jumped back from the opening as a stuttering of blaster fire flashed through.
Yeah, there we go, all right,
Han said. He was against the wall on the other side of the opening, blaster ready, but with no chance of getting a shot in through the rear guard's fire.
How many people has Ferrier got on this ship, anyway?
A lot, Lando growled.
The door, apparently deciding that no one was going through after all, slid shut again.
I guess we do this the hard way. Let's get back to the main hatchway and try to catch him there.
Han grabbed his shoulder.
too late, he said. Listen.
Lando frowned, straining his ears. Over the quiet hum of ship's noises, he could make out the rapid-fire spitting of stormtrooper laser rifles in the distance.
They're aboard, he murmured.
Yeah,
Han nodded. The deck vibrated briefly beneath their feet, and abruptly the laser fire slackened off.
Subsonic grenade,
he identified it.
That's it. Come on.
Come on where?
Lando asked as Han set off down the cross corridor.
After the escape pod racks,
the other said.
We're getting out of here.
Lando felt his mouth drop open. But he looked at his friend, and his objections died unsaid. Han's face was set into tight lines, his eyes smoldering with anger and frustration. He knew what this meant, all right. Probably better than Lando did. The escape pod bobbed on the surface of the sea, surrounded by 100 other pods and floating bits of reef. Through the tiny porthole, Han watched as, in the distance, the last of the Imperial assault shuttles lifted from the Coral Vanda and headed back to space.
That's it, then?
Lando ventured from the seat behind him.
That's it,
Han said, hearing the bitterness in his voice.
We'll probably start picking up the pods soon.
We did all we could, Han,
Lando pointed out quietly.
And it could have been worse. They could have blown the Coral Vanda out of the water. It might have been days before anyone came to get us then.
Which would have given the Empire that much more of a head start.
Oh, yeah, great,
Han said sourly.
We're really on top of things.
What else could we have done?
Lando persisted.
Scuttle the ship to keep them from getting him? Never mind that we'd have killed several hundred people in the process. Or maybe just gotten ourselves killed fighting three assault shuttles worth of stormtroopers. At least this way, Coruscant has a chance to get ready before ships from the Dark Force start showing up in battle.
Lando was trying. You had to give him that. But Han wasn't ready to be cheered up yet.
How do you get ready to get hit by 200 dreadnoughts?
He growled.
We're stretched to the limit as it is.
Come on, Han,
Lando said, his voice starting to sound a little irritated.
Even if the ships are in mint condition and ready to fly, they're still going to need 2,000 crewers apiece to man them. It'll be years before the Imperials can scrape that many recruits together and teach them how to fly the things.
Except that the Empire already had a call out for new ships,
Han reminded him.
Means they already have a bunch of recruits ready to go.
I doubt they have 400,000 of them,
Lando countered.
Come on, try looking on the bright side for once.
There's not much bright side here to look at.
Han shook his head.
Sure there is, Lando insisted. Thanks to your quick action, the New Republic still has a fighting chance.
Han frowned at him.
What do you mean?
You saved my life, remember? Shot those goons of farriers off my back.
Yeah, I remember. What does that have to do with the New Republic's chances?
Eh, Lando said, looking scandalized. You know perfectly well how fast the New Republic would fall apart without me around.
Han tried real hard, but he couldn't quite strangle off a smile on that one. He compromised, letting it come out twisted.
All right, I give up.
He sighed.
If I stop grousing, will you shut up?
Deal.
Lando nodded. Han turned back to the porthole, the smile fading away. Lando could talk all he wanted, but the loss of the Katana fleet would be a first magnitude disaster, and they both knew it. Somehow, they had to stop the Empire from getting to those ships. Somehow.
Chapter 26.
Mon Mothma shook her head in wonderment.
The Katana fleet, she breathed. After all these years, it's incredible.
Some might even put it more strongly than that,
Phalia added coolly, his fur rippling as he gazed hard at Card's impassive face. He'd been doing a lot of that throughout the hastily called meeting, Leia had noticed.
gazing hard at Card, at Luke, at Leia herself.